Prescription products require completion of an online medication consultation with an independent healthcare provider through the LifeMD platform and are only available if prescribed. Subscription required. Individual results may vary. Additional restrictions apply at LifeMD.com. Read all warnings before using GLP-1s. Side effects may include a risk of thyroid C-cell tumors. Do not use GLP-1s if you or your family have a history of thyroid cancer.
Confused on where to start with weight loss medication? See the lowest prices available with or without insurance for Wegovy, Zepbound, and more at TryLifeMD.com. 95% of LifeMD patients said starting their weight loss journey was simple. Listen to Tara's story after losing 42 pounds.
You just take your shot. It doesn't feel like you're on a diet. What I wasn't expecting it to do was to shut off the food noise. I had gone from 237 to 195. This was life-altering, and if I can do it, I feel like anybody can do it.
Get your free insurance benefits check in minutes right now at TryLifeMD.com. Nearly 96% of patients said they would recommend the LifeMD program to anyone who wants to lose weight. Get started right now at TryLifeMD.com. That's TryLifeMD.com.
This is Hidden Killers Week in Review.
A look back at the most prolific stories of the week.
This is the Hidden Killers Podcast with Tony Bruschi and continuing coverage of the case against Brian Koberger.
There's some big stuff coming out in the case against Brian Koberger. In fact, if you're watching this today as we are dropping it, it's going to be this evening. There's some big things coming up against Brian Koberger, at least Friday night. Again, Friday the 9th. Of May 2025 is when it's going to drop, and there's a lot in it. I heard about it yesterday. I got a text from the producer, and I was like, oh, this is going to be interesting. And I just saw the preview, and you're about to see the preview, and oh my gosh, Robin, this is, there's some stuff in here. There's some stuff in here that we have not seen from new footage, high-definition footage of the vehicle that's not grainy and really questionable. There's allegedly some text messages. There's search history. There's images on the phone. There's stuff no one has seen before. Things that we've been going, it'll come out in court. Well, as things do here in the United States, they come out on Dateline first.
Right.
and here is a little preview of what you're going to be seeing, and we'll discuss some of this on the other side. This is Dateline. Going to be airing on Friday the 9th, 2025. Keith Morrison reporting. Let's take a look.
In this house, just steps from campus, in the early morning hours of November 13th, 2022, four University of Idaho students, Maddie Mogan, Kaylee Gonsalves, Xander Kernodal, and Ethan Chapin, were stabbed to death. Their accused killer, Brian Koberger, faces trial this summer. He's pleaded not guilty. For the last 2.5 years, Dateline has been on the ground reporting, gathering, and learning from people with direct knowledge of the case. We've obtained things that have never before been seen publicly. Like these security videos from a camera on a house near the murder scene. Videos that show a white sedan, a car that investigators believe was driven by Brian Koberger, making repeated passes at the King Road house that night before the murders. With evidence like this and our reporting, we have assembled a timeline for the weeks, months, and days before and after the murders. Starting with a pool party Koberger attended in July, just after he moved to the area in pursuit of his PhD in criminology. An exclusive interview with a woman who exchanged numbers with Koberger, then did not return his text.
You know, the universe intervened and for whatever reason just distracted me from further engaging in that interaction.
We'll also reveal records from Koberger's cell phone that are in the possession of law enforcement and Google searches regarding the serial killer Ted Bundy. We have also seen these. Dozens of photos in Koberger's cell phone. Browsing history. Women from Washington State and the University of Idaho, including close friends of the King Road victims. Dateline has also obtained records showing the details of what an FBI cell phone expert has claimed to be in the month before the murders, 23 occasions when Koberger's phone connected to a cell tower, providing coverage to within 100 meters of the house at 1122 King Road. And in the hours after the murders, details of the timing of phone calls Brian Koberger made to a phone linked to his parents just before the controversial selfie he took. And we'll talk to the mother, whose daughter was supposed to be staying in the house the night of the murders, but a change of plans may have saved her daughter's life.
How soon was
was it that you thought, my God, she was going to be there?
I didn't think about that right away. Huh. All I could think about was the kids.
Makes you sad too, doesn't it?
It does. Sorry.
So many damaged families. Angela DeVejas told us that her daughter, Ashlyn, Maddie Mogan's best friend, moved away from Idaho and now refuses to come home to visit because of the trauma associated with the murders. She's hoping some of that may change and Ashlyn will start to grieve after Brian Koberger's trial.
Keith Morrison, Dateline on Friday. Robin Drake, retired FBI special agent, former chief of the Counterintelligence Behavioral Analysis Program. Reactions to that?
Yeah, well, from the get-go on this, Tony, we said prosecution must have an awful lot that we're not aware of because they've been so, I wouldn't say passive, they've seemed very confident every time defense would bring a new motion up or challenge a new thing, and they're kind of like, whatever. And our hypothesis all along has been they've got more. Mm-hmm. And yeah, so it's going to be really revealing, and I can't wait to see the content of those texts because I think he is, again, he was studying and working for a PhD, but he's only executed at a high school level, thankfully, because I think the trail he left is going to be very obvious.
There's some interesting stuff in those texts. Here's an excerpt of one of them. This is with the girl that I believe he met at the pool party. We're going to see far more in depth of the text, but they're worded very weird, at least weird to, I think, I don't know, what we consider just a healthy brain or a healthy communicating individual. One of them, they're talking about going for a hike. And there's a first part to this that's longer. I don't have it directly in front of me, but I read that yesterday and it's weird.
I think some of these were mentioned also in Howard Bloom's book too. Because yes. You know, as soon as you mentioned the pool party, is like, you know, I'm seeing some good overlaps here. So really good investigative work on everyone's part.
When Koberger was trying to follow up about going to this party or about going to go hiking, it's not like, hey, yeah, it'd be fun. I really enjoy that activity, so please let me know. I really enjoy that activity when talking. It's a very formal way of speaking. I mean, it's mechanical. As I guess the way, and I know that's just a short piece. You're going to have to see the rest of them. If I had it in front of me, I'd read it, but, it's very mechanical way of thinking. It's like someone who doesn't know how to communicate. So they're just observing other people. And this is how they're going to try and do it. It's like a knockoff. It's like a knockoff of normal human being behavior.
And Tony, you are describing psychopathic behavior. Yeah. I mean, he's Pinocchio trying to be a real boy and he doesn't quite have the skill set to do it.
Yeah.
That's why he's studying human beings. He's studying the horrible side of human beings in his course of study, but he's literally in a life study of human beings and how they act and want to interact with others.
Yeah. I mean, it's very much, I mean, it's like a cheap Chinese knockoff of a regular product.
Mm-hmm. It's like, and that's also why, you know, it's interesting as they get more, and I'm not saying they, I've seen cases where there are purely, and this is from clinicals, you know, psychological evaluations that my friends and colleagues have done on psychopaths, and I've seen the work they've done. They are complete chameleons. Mm-hmm. They're very, very good. There's this one case where we had a psychopath, I think I mentioned before, you know, a while ago, where this individual was just going for the rush of taking advantage of other people because that's his only reward he was ever getting. Mm-hmm. And so he would take on this persona. He took on the persona of a fundraiser for a political party. And he's got pictures hobnobbing with this high level people, like people that ran for president. And he's driving Porsches and Ferraris. And you go to his apartment, there's nothing there because he took on that persona. It was so believable. Then he took on a persona trying to build people out of churches. He became a pastor and he was this great pastor, came across very empathetic. And so he molded himself to the environment needed. It's kind of like why when we talk about Lori Daybell Vallo, I said she's doing very well in prison, most likely from my perspective, because she's manipulating as a psychopath the entire environment around her.
Who was that guy that you were talking about?
I wish I could remember the name of him. He's a former CIA case officer that went rogue.
Yeah.
And he actually was about to get fired from the CIA for the funniest thing ever, the lowest level thing, voucher fraud.
No kidding.
For like only a couple hundred dollars. But he was a deep undercover for them. It's called a non-official cover guy. And he was getting fired for that. And once he got fired for that, he went off grid. and he went off grid, but he's also a lawyer, highly trained lawyer. And he took that lawyer skill and he built people out of money over here, actually in Arizona, I think, is like a, this
yeah.
quadriplegic couple. And he built them out of hundreds of thousands of dollars of legal fees and then ran. And he left his Ferrari at the runway and got on a plane and left. And then he took on another persona in another state. And so this is the guy I mentioned before that he actually put $1 million in cash in a suitcase by the front door of this dive bar where he's drinking Jägermeisters and beers all day long. And you're just waiting to see if someone would pick up that $1 million of cash and walk out the door with it.
I think I've seen something on this story. I think it's been reported right before the.
I'm not sure. It's a while ago.
Yeah, it's I remember seeing something on it somewhere. I'm like, oh my God, that was quite. Let me ask you, in that world, I know we're kind of going off topic of Koberger here, but when we're talking about psychopaths or this behavior like this in the world that you were in with counterintelligence and behaviors, when you're dealing with individuals who are needing to be pretty much chameleons, you know, to kind of work both sides and be a spy and kind of trade information that way. Do you see, I mean, is that a common trait in a lot of people where they almost kind of have to be somewhere down that, that dark triad to really function and to be able to flip both ways and one day be this person and one day be that person and be able to pull it off really well?
It's a really great question. And I've seen it go both ways.
Yeah.
I've seen some organizations and agencies, both domestically and abroad, hire their intelligence collectors and their overseas intelligence collectors like the CIA does. That's why they have some CIA officers that go bad. They're the deep cover operatives because they have to have a higher lack of empathy, higher on psychopathy, so they can manipulate the living hell out of people and not feel bad for it, not be remorseful for it. But at the same time, they have to have enough of a moral and ethical grounding to keep them from going rogue.
Yeah.
And at the same time, then you have people like me. I was on the flip side of this where I'm trying to recruit people like this.
Yeah.
So my skill set is completely backwards opposite from that. I have deep, deep active empathy because I'm here to solve massive critical life challenges and problems in your life. And I need to see life from your context. I need to mitigate all the risks to safety, security, and prosperity you perceive from your optic and perspective. That cannot be done by a psychopath.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
So collectors tend to edge again. If you're going to take a paintbrush, I have great friends that are former case officers for the agency with the utmost empathy I've ever seen.
Yeah.
But I've also seen collectors that are at the high end of psychopathy or higher end edging towards it. Mm-hmm. At the same time, the recruiters of them tend to be more empathetic. So again, paintbrush overview. Yeah. From my perspective,
it's almost like opposites attract in a way where like you need, both to make that work. Yeah.
And they can collaborate very well, especially when they're both self-aware enough to know, hey, here's a skill set I'm missing. And here's how you can augment that skill set. And then likewise, you know, for a case officer or an operative that is on that higher edge of psychopathy, but they're very aware of it. They're going to allow themselves to be grounded by you. It's let's call it a marriage. That's what we do. You know, we kind of complement each other, and that's why it takes teams of people. It's very rarely is anyone ever successful singularly. You do need good, healthy relationships to solve life's most wickedly complex problems. But in this case, it's like Koberger, when you're edging high on psychopathy and you don't have a loving critic that you're partnered with, you're going to miss steps. I mean, imagine. So that's what his dad was attempting to do. You know, just throwing some conjecture in here. His dad seemed very vested in the success of his son. His dad seems deeply empathetic. Yeah. You know, people that take the actions that they take as a parent, that's an empathetic thing. And so had Koberger allowed his dad, you know, assuming that, you know, we'll take the assumption here that, you know, maybe he did this. He's not proven, you know, until proven guilty in court of law, obviously. But, you know, had he allowed someone like his dad more into his life to balance that out, maybe also the professor could have been someone that was, you know, doing the same sort of thing, you know, that he had a relationship with, you know, someone to balance out that lack of empathy that he had.
Do you think Koberger had he had that stronger, that piece of empathy, that basically that boundary, that bumper, that had he heeded it the way that he is seemingly, and obviously we're not psychologists, but seemingly high in that area of possible psychopathy or somewhere along that dark triad, if he's the killer, Had that been in place better, or had there been maybe somebody other than his dad or somebody that he respected enough to take that boundary and go, okay, I wonder how good of an agent he would have been if he got into law enforcement and was investigating these sort of crimes, because he can relate, it seems, and can think that way. But the thing is, he thought all that way. If this is in fact him, he went all the way through it and became that person. But if he could just walk up to it and see it from that perspective and then use it for good, I could see that he could have been really good at this, but he just couldn't stop his urge of becoming the criminal, it seems.
So that's a really fascinating conjecture to think about. So based on what the observations I'm having of him is, he would not have been very good as like a CIA case officer overseas,
mm-hmm.
because they have to recruit their own sources. So the types of operatives that go overseas to gather intelligence through other human individuals, like cooperations by recruiting, you know, deep rooted sources and everything, requires also a deep level of empathy. The case officers that did those work, especially in denied areas like Russia, China, in the Middle East, you know, recruiting, you know, people that are terrorists and flipping them to our side and getting, you know, that requires deep levels of empathy. Mm-hmm. Now, what he could potentially be good at is be the pointy edge of the spear, like the person they did recruit.
Mm-hmm.
That could actually be the person that could do nefarious things to someone to gather information and put up these strategies to stay alive potentially. Again, the problem with someone that is that is so high in psychopathy like that, though, like you're seeing here, he stands out. It doesn't seem like he has that ability to really blend into the environment around him. So I think he's edging up that high in some way, or there's other things, other issues at play, whether it's like the diagnosis for autism. I don't know. Mm-hmm. But he's not a very functional. He's not a good predator, obviously, because he really stood out in all his behaviors. And so those are elements that also play into these things.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.